listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, your alternative to mainstream media. Broadcasting from Simon Fraser University at Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Spiral dynamics describes nine main value systems, often called levels of consciousness. These states of consciousness shape how free will is expressed, how we relate to ourselves and to others and the world. Much of our behavior is driven by habit and life conditions. So being aware of these patterns in oneself can loosen our automatic pilot of expression, leading to a more spacious and generative way of being. The nine different modes of consciousness offer both a gift and a blind spot. The more conscious we become, the more genuinely free and creative our choices become. Our guest today in this exploration of consciousness will be Dr. Regina Leffers. Regina Leffers is the retired director of the Center of Excellence for the Built Environment and professor of sustainable construction for the College of Engineering at Purdue University in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Her undergraduate degrees are in psychology and philosophy, and her doctoral degree is in philosophy from Purdue University. She teaches classes on consciousness and meditation and has practiced meditation for the last 45 years. Dr. Leffers is the author of This Is Consciousness. So please join us for the next hour as we investigate how to move with more consciousness and grace in the world with our guest, Dr. Regina Leffers. I'm speaking with Dr. Leffers in her home by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Dr. Leffers, welcome. May I call you Regina?
Please do. Please do. That was a beautiful introduction, Justine.
Oh, thank you so much. I mentioned spiral dynamics, and I have never really delved into that in all of my decades of living because it was so complicated and so academic, and it was just so dense. And you have taken that, and you have really given us a whole much more easily recognized way of thinking about spiral dynamics. What made you enter the idea of consciousness studies in the first place? What really moved you?
I would say that the thing that moved me primarily was my inability to forgive or feel grateful. And I began meditating when I was 30. And I started that practice and meditated every day then for all of these years and worked on forgiving every day. Every day in journaling and meditation, I tried. And I couldn't get there.
But it just didn't stick.
It didn't stick. That's it. And that shocked me, really, because, I mean, Maybe after a week, maybe after a month, it's okay. And you might expect to have to keep working on something. But after 10 years, to have the same issue return. And that's in spite of therapy, too. It kept me thinking about meditating every day and making sure that I did that. I didn't find out why that I couldn't forgive or feel grateful until I was in my 60s and worked with a neuroscientist who did an EEG on my brain, and he found that I had suffered an injury to my right prefrontal cortex that prevented, and I'm saying this for a reason, Justine.
Yes, yes. First of all, how old were you when you got this neuroscientist to look into your brain?
Not until I was in my 60s, early 60s. And I suffered the injury when I was 19 years old. And it just happens to be the thing that I worked on all of my adult life trying to forgive.
It was caused by your father, actually, who was very abusive, wasn't he?
He was. He was. Yes.
He actually hit you in a way that caused that injury.
He did. Yeah.
And that's where you worked on forgiveness and couldn't stick with it until you found that you didn't have the capacity for it. What is say? Describe that.
So what I found, what the neuroscientist found with that injury, he discovered that he expected me to present with no ability to focus and no short-term memory. What we also discovered is that the fingers of that injury that extended into all parts of my brain prevented my brain from going into alpha brainwave. And alpha brainwave is the only wave in which we can actually feel grateful and forgive. So it's vitally important. Alpha brainwaves are vitally important to develop. It's also happens to be the place where we can get the most creative solutions to problems and things like that. New behaviors
right.
can come about from that.
It was so fascinating to read about how you actually healed your brain through this alpha presence. I mean, you had to be in alpha state to start to do that. Regina, when I opened your book and you mentioned spiral dynamics, but you also mentioned like the way it's usually described as stages of consciousness or levels of consciousness, but you've changed all of that because that's so hierarchical. It's like a ladder that we walk up and we get to this basic stage and then finally we get to some sort of enlightened stage, but that's not the way you look at it. So tell us, how do you look at these modes of consciousness?
Well, thank you for that question. I see them as facets of consciousness, facets, as if a sun is shining through us and develops us in a different direction. We can think of our consciousness as if it is an elastic band that expands and contracts. So if we think about consciousness, what we can actually feel, if we stop to feel it, is that when we grow in consciousness, we expand in the amount of existence that we include in who we are. So we start as the smallest facet of consciousness, which would lead people to think in terms of a ladder or hierarchical structure, but that's just because our brains are made that way. It's more comfortable if we can really think about things, you know, as a linear, in a linear way. That's not how we grow in consciousness. It's not linear, and it's never not messy.
And what I get from reading, like, the different facets, and I love the how I held it, facets. I thought about facets on a diamond. And the diamond is one item, but it has all these little ways of kind of reflecting the light. Then they're called facets. And I understand that there are the certain facets that are more, let's say, constrictive. There's a good part of it. There's the love part of it. You write about all of this and the fear part of it, how we interact with this particular facet with love or act with it as fear. And those are the different ways that we can be in each facet. And I love that you included that. Do you have something to say about how you came up with that?
I wanted to try to explain to people how important it is to feel love and fear in the body. So if we can feel it in the body and also ask ourselves what it is that we fear, what do we love? We can actually tell then what facet of consciousness we're coming from. So I would really like to say that I think that these facets of consciousness, the way we grow in consciousness, is critical for us human beings to understand. Because we can, if we understand, then we can deliberately grow ourselves, expand our consciousness, knowing that we could get stuck in one of those facets of consciousness. For example, fearing something like other people that aren't in the small group of people that we love. You know, our belonging is the second facet of consciousness. It is what I call the second facet, is belonging. Because we we learn to be loyal to the small group of people that belongs to us. Okay. That what we fear then in belonging, we can fear anyone who isn't inside of that circle who belongs to us. And so we can see it exhibited in the world and in our own lives in all kinds of ways. We can take ourselves, you know, as committed to a political party, and then everybody who isn't part of that political party, we other. We yes. turn into non-humans. And that comes from the very second facet of consciousness. It's a small place to live from.
Yes, it is. It is. And it has a lot of fences around it. And there, so in other words, and we feel safe within that. And so we don't want to venture out because that's difficult to move out into another facet. I would love to talk about, let's talk about an example, because I think you give a story, and I think it's the fourth facet, and it's called comply. And so we comply to belong, so to speak, or we don't want to, you know, shift our way of being in case we make somebody mad, or we, you know, whatever it is that we do, that we just comply. It's just easier to comply. And you give the example of your own mother that who grew up Catholic, and you know, it was about birth control and the Catholic Church. So talk about this in relation to the comply facet.
Okay. First, so we've now, if we're in comply, we have expanded from survival, from survive, the very smallest facet. We've expanded into and through belong, where we only included certain people in who we were loyal to. We have moved through individuate, the third facet of consciousness, think teenager. So somebody who is individuating or separating from the people who raised them, and trying to be an independent person, okay? And then we expand into comply, the fourth facet of consciousness. And essentially comply are the rules that we learn to follow in the culture that we live in. So comply is all about those rules. And so you can think about the Catholic rules for women. I actually have no idea what it is now. I would venture to guess that it's the same, that part hasn't changed. But when my mother was a young woman, childbearing, she learned in the Catholic Church that you are not allowed to use any kind of birth control. And birth control is something that my father wanted. And my mother went to the Catholic priest at our church, and he told my mother that she would have to fight my father to her death if he tried to use birth control, which is, it's a shocking thing to hear that, you know, that a priest would say something like that. Yet that's what it would mean to follow a religion, that religion's rules that closely, as my mother did. So I'm one of eight kids.
Well, she really did fight it, didn't she?
She did, and she never wavered on that.
Yeah.
One of the things, but then the rules, I don't want to paint the rules as bad.
Yes.
Because we really do need that structure in our own consciousness as we learn. We need to learn the rules so we can figure out what is right for us. You know, yes. At some point, a reasonable human being would review rules and think about whether they fit or not.
Right. Okay. I'm thinking that it just reminds me of my own life. In the next one, which you call re-individuate and risk. And I'm thinking, just because we're talking about the Catholic Church, I grew up Episcopalian. And I got married really, really young. I was like 18. And it just, it's probably a marriage that could have been annulled. But I actually went through a divorce. But I went to my priest in the Episcopal Church and I said that I wanted to get a divorce. And he said, well, if you do that, you will no longer be able to take communion. And it got me so angry. It just, something rose up in me. And I quit the Episcopal Church. I mean, that's where the risk came, because I loved my church. I loved the ritual of it. And it actually, when I look back on that, Regina, I understand that it really launched me into my spiritual adventure of going through lots of different religions then after that, until I finally, in my 80s, I think I've arrived at a place where I feel comfortable, although it's still a piece of work in progress. But it was that jumping off place, taking that risk. And that's not easy, though, because there are a lot of pressures to kind of stay put and stay within the boundaries of our family and friends.
Justine, I feel like you're a soulmate. Because you just described me leaving the church, Catholic Church, at 30. For a very similar reason. So yes, that's what we do. We review whether something works for us. And if it doesn't, in that area of life, we expand to look for something different. We leave that behind. And we all know people who have then stayed in something that is uncomfortable because, or something that really doesn't fit them. So because of the rules or fear of losing all the friends they made at that church or whatever it is.
Exactly. And I actually went through that in one of my explorations. For 3 years, I joined Jehovah's Witnesses. That was one of my, as I progressed through the different choices I was making. And then when I felt that it was not true to my inner being of who I was, I left it. And then what they did at that time, I don't know what they're doing these days, but at that time, they disfellowshipped me. And that means that no one in my particular area, no Jehovah's Witness could even speak to me. If I saw them in a grocery store, they were not allowed to even speak to me. I don't think that's a rule anymore, but it was devastating because I made friends there. And so to feel ostracized by a group is no small thing. So for people who take that risk, it's a big deal. It's a big deal.
It is a big deal. And kudos to all those who do it. There are some people who really have to do something in order to live with themselves. Really, anybody who is gay, lesbian, transgender, anyone like that, you can be sure that they have moved into risk and reindividuate at least. Mm-hmm. Because they've had to face that demon, that very fear, that big fear. They've had to leave everything they know.
Right. And hopefully that's getting better in our culture, is being accepted in many ways. But boy, it can still be really hard. We hear all sorts of stories of people telling their family that coming out of the closet, I think they call it, and there you go. And it's not an easy thing to do. So that's a big one. I want to say something about, you mentioned brainwaves, and you mentioned the story about your own brainwave being cured or in that EEG sort of thing. And when you did that, you started to function more in that alpha state. And you tell this incredible story because in the alpha state, we're more in touch with our intuition, with our creativity. It's just synchronicities really are more noticeable. And you tell this story about when you were young, you gave a baby, you were pregnant, and you released your baby to be adopted. And years and years later, you had an experience in this like alpha state. Can you talk about that?
So now you're talking, I'm just going to contextualize it.
Please.
Because we've been talking about the facets of consciousness and how we grow, and we got to comply and then risk and re-individuate. That's the fifth one. And then the sixth one is called care and empathy. Okay, that's the sixth. Then we have to actually kind of do some definite things to walk over a bridge. That's how I think of it. Into seven, the seventh facet of consciousness, which is really when you're living from your foundational core self. You're living very authentically, but you also recognize connectivity, the connectivity of everything, the actual connectivity of everything. It's as not just an idea, but you also know that it's real and live according to that. The story that you're asking me about happened as an experience, which we can get to. We can live a piece of life from seven, from that larger expanded facet of consciousness through an experience, okay? And the experience you're talking about is when I was in my 50s. And so I had not held that baby for 50 years.
Wow. But I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Dr. Regina Leffers, and she is the author of What is Consciousness? And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, ReginaLeffers.com, and she spells her last name L-E-F-F-E-R-S, ReginaLeffers.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions Membership Support and by Clarity International, publisher of the book Get Clarity, the lights-on guide to manifesting success in life and work. GetClarity.com. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. NewDimensions.org.
I'm here with Dr. Regina Leffers, and we're talking about a story about when she gave away her baby, and now it's
just over 30 years later. I was on an escalator in a mall, and I recognized that baby that I had not seen for 30-some years. I actually got to hold her for 15 minutes before I was asked to sign the papers and give her up for adoption. That 15 minutes of connection is what what gave me the feeling of this young